Okay, welcome everyone. Rav Kadir? Okay, so as everyone knows, Baruch Hashem, we took a trip to Poland this year, to Mekaymus HaKadoshim. We were there for 4 days, and we will try to quickly give a synopsis and some pictures of what we were able to see. So here, first of all, you just have a map of Poland. Here's Poland. You see, we're going to start here in Warsaw, and just to show where we're going to go, we're going to be going. We'll see each place. Well, I'll have a map each place, but just as an overview, we're going to be going down to Lublin, down this way, all the way till Krakow. Over here is Auschwitz, and we're going to end up in Krakow. So we're going to make sort of like a U, like this, as we go through Poland. As you see, Poland is a very, very big country, and it's Bialystok is up here, Lodz is here. It's a very big country. There's a lot to see. Czechoslovakia is down here. And we covered a lot, Baruch Hashem, in the few days we were there. So we left here on Sunday. We arrived in Warsaw 9:50. We stopped in Frankfurt for Shacharis, over here in this neighborhood somewhere. And we arrived in Warsaw 9:15 Monday morning. The first thing we did was we went to the Warsaw Beis HaKvaris. The Warsaw Beis HaKvaris here, you can see it says men must cover their heads in the cemetery. No saying about the women. These are the hours, and this is the gate into the Warsaw cemetery. As we'll see, this is a new gate, there's an old gate inside. This is the gate inside. Now, if you the Warsaw Beis HaKvaris, this is a map of the Warsaw Beis HaKvaris. If a person knows where their family is, it's all split into sections and streets. It's a gigantic place. There's about 400,000 kvarim there, about 250,000 matzevas. In other words, there's a lot of mass graves, and there's a lot of places where you just can't find anything. It's just grass, and you're walking through kvarim. It's a massive, massive place. Now, in the entrance here, there is a big board that has all the Kivrei HaTzadikim, or some of them at least, Ostrov, Amshana, Biala, and it tells you over here which street and which row in the Beis HaKvaris it is. So if a person is looking for a specific slanim, down here is the Netziv, as we'll see in a moment. All different, here you see the Ger families, the son of the Chiddush Arim, brother of the Svas Emes, the Kutzker. There's a lot here. And if you know what you're looking for, you're able to find the numerous Gedolim that are buried in Warsaw. So this is just a picture of what's going on here. It's Warsaw, the Beis HaKvaris is a forest. It's a forest full of trees growing all over the place. And you have to, that's why it's a massive, massive area. Now, when we were there, a few weeks before, there was a massive storm that had broken down tons and tons of trees. And because of that, they closed off many areas. You can see here, there's a rope here. They closed off the areas because matzevas had fallen and trees had fallen. It was dangerous to go in different places. The places that we had to go were closed. But it was at our own risk, and we went anyways to many of the places, Baruch Hashem, as we'll see in a moment. The first area here is, you see a sign on the tree, is going to Oyel Slonim and Volozhin and Brisk. Now, on the way to the Oyel of Volozhin, I stopped at the kever of my father-in-law's great-great-grandfather. Last year we talked about the Teres Avram, was the last Mashkiach of Avram Grzynski in Slabodka. This is his father's kever. A cousin of mine found it about 10 years ago on his yard site. Now, his father is also buried somewhere there. I had the address, but we searched for I don't know how long, and we couldn't find it. But so this is on the way there. Rav Itcha Grzynski, his name was. So then he come to the oil of the Brisk, which is Rav Chaim Brisker, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, and the Netziv. And here's a picture of the oil amongst, this is the oil. Now, because this was a restricted area, they didn't give us the key to get in. The guy wouldn't give us the key. We knew to ask the key for the Netziv, but he says, no, you're not allowed to go there. He found us there, he wasn't happy with us, but we pasha couldn't get in. So here's the oil of the Netziv, and the Netziv Besayf Yama was in Warsaw. Reb Chaim was nifter during World War I, and he was also near Warsaw, and that's how he ended up being buried over here. But Baruch Hashem, we had someone who had a camera who had a long extender on it, so he was able to get a picture of the inside. So here's the two matzevas of Rav Chaim and the Netziv. Here you see closer, here's the Netziv, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, and here you have the Netziv. Grad, it's a very interesting thing, because if there's a Sefer Harav Mibrisk, if you look there, when they first redid the matzevas, they by mistake switched them. And they had the Netziv on this side and the Rav Chaim on the other side, and it was a mistake. Eventually they fixed it up, and now it's the regular way. So this is the inside. Again, we're only looking in from the windows, from the side, but you see what's going on here in Reb Chaim and the Netziv. Now, what happened was, a few of us were looking for relatives, and Baruch Hashem, one of us found a relative. No one's been there for 100 years, a great-great-grandfather, a great-grandmother on the other side he wasn't able to find. So we sort of split up, and it got a little fragmented of where we were, but in the front of the Beis HaKvaris is the oil of the Chemda Shlaimai. The Chemda Shlaimai is a famous Rav, and he was a Rav in Warsaw. And if you remember on Tisha B'Av, we talked about Rav Aronson, who talked about many different stories from him in the camps. He was a grandson of the Chemda Shlaimai, and in fact, after the war, he's the one who rebuilt this oil on the place. They knew where it was, where the Chemda Shlaimai was buried. Here's the other side, the entrance in to the oil, and here's the inside. And the inside, the middle one, is the Chemda Shlaimai, and on either side are grandsons of the Chemda Shlaimai. Now, right outside the Chemda Shlaimai, right here, is the Matseva of the Zera Avram. The Zera Avram, if you look closely, it says the Chasan of Meir Simcha Shlita of Bezdin Devins. This was the Meshech Chachma's son-in-law. His only son-in-law was Nifter very young. He was a Goyin Olam, and he was a Misnagid in Warsaw, which was like overwhelmingly Hasidish. That's how they write about his Gadlus, that even though he was a Misnagid in Warsaw, he was Mekubal by everybody. Everyone gave him big Chashiva. So this is his kever, as you see again over here, right outside the Chemda Shlaimai, is Reb Meir Simcha's son-in-law. Right next to him is the Tiferes Yaakov. The Tiferes Yaakov, we mentioned him in the Drasha the other day, Reb Yaakov Gesundheit. He wrote a Sefer on Gittin, and he wrote a Sefer on Chulin, well used. He was a Rav in Warsaw as well, if we mentioned. He actually had to leave Warsaw because, as we said, he was not Hasidish and he was not Tzionish. So he got it from both sides, and there was a major machlaikas, and eventually he had to leave Warsaw, even though he had been the Rav, I don't know for how long. So he's also right outside the Chemda Shlaimai. The Maril Tzintz is a very famous Rav. Many of you know him by his different, he has numerous svarim, the Tivgitin, all different types of svarim he wrote. The Malay HaOmer on Chumash, and he didn't have any money to print his Svarim. So he wrote on his Matseva, here, Baal Mechaber Seif Get Mekusher, Shar Svarim, Shar Ksiva Yad. He says, Umi Sheishtadol Bad Fasasam, he says, anybody who will work to print my Svarim, Yeloi Mechaber LeMelitz, so he'll be a Melitz Yosher for him, Im Yeloi Schus. If the person has a Schus, he'll be a Melitz Yosher for him. So this is the his Matseva, and there's like a little oil next to it. It's not right over it, where there's candles, and there's a whole plaques over here for different there's a Mechain Maril Tzintz. My Shver Grada put out, and my Zayde Zecharan Lebracha also put out, they were Einiklach from him, and they put out many Svarim from the Maril Tzintz. My Shver asked me to be Maskrim there, because the Maril Tzintz says, if you put out his Svarim, he'll be a Melitz Yosher. Okay, now, this is, here you see where the Ma'ero is. This is just a view. This is the front where we came in, and this is right here in the back is where we were, the Chemda Shlaimai's Ayah. This is the old gate, the original gate of the Beis HaKvaris. And in fact, you see over here, this says the original gate, which was renovated in 1998. And you could see here, this is they have a photograph under it of the original gate here during the war. And afterwards, they renovated it and they put it up here. Now, just this you find throughout Europe. I saw this in Germany, numerous places. After the war, there were so many matzevas broken down, they either hung them up on the wall or on the gate, or they made a wall out of it. So here there's a little wall in front of the kvarim, and a lot of them are made out of... a lot of them are made out of the matzevas. And we'll see, unfortunately, the destruction throughout Europe like that. It's very possible and probable this sidewalk here is also over Kfarim. It's very hard to know what happened after the war, where the Beis HaKfaris really started and ended. If there would be Kehanim, it would be very difficult. We'll see something later in towns like that for them to go. So that was the Warsaw Beis HaKfaris. This was, we spent a couple hours over there. It was about lunchtime. We then went and just saw the outside. This is called the Jewish Museum. It's a famous thing in Warsaw. It depicts 1,000 years of Judaism in Poland. It's supposed to be very good if you're into museums. You're supposed to you could spend days there. But we just looked from the outside, and that was pretty much it. We went, there's nothing left in Warsaw. Warsaw is totally bombed. There's nothing left of anything from before the war, pretty much, as we'll see. On the ground, they have here where it says Ghetto Wall 1943. There's no real wall. They just have it into the sidewalk, a little outline of where the ghetto wall was in Warsaw. This was a place called the Umschlagplatz, which literally means just the gathering place, and they had this throughout Europe, where the Nazis gathered the Yidden to send them off on the trains to the concentration camp. So the place where that was, they made a monument out of marble. Right behind it had been a train station. You see over here, along this path, over 300,000 Jews were driven from 1942 to 1943 to the Warsaw Ghetto, from the Warsaw Ghetto to the gas chambers and extermination camps. And they just have on the area just a big monument as a zecher to that. Right behind it had been the train tracks, and that was the last stop from the Warsaw Ghetto before they took them off to Treblinka and to all different places throughout Poland. Okay, there is one last shul that made it through the war, and this is it. This is the shul, the front of the shul. And as you see over here, there's a plaque that says, "This synagogue today miraculously stands today, the only synagogue in all of Warsaw to survive the flames of World War II. It was desecrated, and then it was rebuilt after the war. But it's the only remaining shul, and the chiddush, any shul should remain. You see, there's mamish nothing left from Warsaw. Here's the inside of the shul redone. They have a daily minyan. It's not every day is it kavua, depends on how many tourists there are. Shabbos, they have every Shabbos. The chief rabbi of Warsaw/Poland, I forgot his name, is the Rav here. And our tour guide had been there for Shabbos beforehand. He said there are 40, 50 people there, mostly tourists. So this is the inside of the shul. Another picture of the inside, you see the balcony. Right now the ladies are over here on the left side behind the mechitza, but originally that had been the balcony. It was really restored beautifully, pretty much the way it was before the war. We davened mincha over there. Right around the corner. It's a whole sort of area where the Jews are. So you have the shul there, and then you have the Jewish center. There's a little ungers there. I don't know if you want to call it ungers. Little makolet there. And we got lunch over there that was waiting for us from, there's a caterer, a ger guy from Eretz Yisrael. It's a catering place throughout Poland. We got all our food from. So we got lunch there. We were starving. We ate the lunch. And we davened mincha, and that was that. This over here is really the last remaining street in the Warsaw Ghetto, the way it originally was. Everything else was totally destroyed and built up, not in its original way. So the streets are not the original streets. But this is the last original street. That's about all it is. There's nothing really much to see over here. Over here on the corner, if you look closely, you're able to see still bullet holes. If you see the holes in the wall from the fighting of the Warsaw Uprising, this building, I don't know what's inside, it's just... It seems to be vacant, but you can still see. And this is pretty much all that's left of Warsaw. When you go through Warsaw, you see nothing. It's brand new, built up like a modern city. It's very, very little to see. If you remember last year in Lithuania and Belarus, these places still looked very old. There were a lot of remaining things from the 1940s. There's mamish nothing left. Warsaw is a big city, and in Poland, and they built it up very modernized. From there, about 1, 2 o'clock, we left Warsaw, Actually, we went then to the airport to pick up Menachem Libling, who had a little delay, and he only landed about 1, 2 o'clock. We picked him up, and from there we went from Warsaw down to Gora, which is Ger. Ger, it was about an hour drive, 45 minutes to an hour drive. We drove to Ger. See, for those of you, the Piatetsna, here's Piatetsna. These were all, Ger is also, they were all like suburbs, pretty much, of Warsaw. They still are. And so that's where we moved down. We got to Ger maybe 3, 4 o'clock, and this is the Ger Beis HaKvaris. This whole thing is a Beis HaKvaris full of Kvarim, but there's no Matzevas. This looks like it was, we saw last year also, all full of just grass and overgrown. And there's a few matzevas that we rebuilt. This was, if I read it correctly, this is the mechutin of the Kutzker. And you see over here, there's a lot of the family of the Gers. Here you see, this was the Imre Emes's wife is here. And then you could see, in this one, you see, this is the Sas Emes's daughter. And there's numerous ladies here. I don't know if you can see over here. Aishas, this is the Chedush Yarim's wife. Over here are a bunch of their children. You can see the Imramis' daughter. Now, if you see it says V'chaluka Zu, they don't know for sure exactly, it looks like, where the actual kever was. But after the war, they put things up here. And this is the oil that has the Chedush Yarim and the Svas Emes in it. Here you see, this is the in here is the Matzevas of the Chedush Yarim. And the Svas Emes, here again, is on the walls. Well, don't worry, we don't have too many pictures of people. I kept the people out. Try at least. I didn't get any. My son teaches me you need a release to print people's pictures. Okay. You're Michael. Okay. Here's the outside of it. We were here. We said Tehillim. We made a Mishaberach L'Chaylim. We said over a shtickle from the Svas Emes, also from that week's Parsha. Benjamin Eisenstark said a shtickle over from the Svas Emes. So now, I don't have a picture of him here, I don't think, but the guy who runs the kever, his name was Matisyo Price. He's one of the last remaining Jews in Ger, or the last remaining family in Ger. He knows a lot of the history there. He's the one who has the keys and everything, and he takes care of the Beis HaKvaris. Now again, you see here, this is all Kvarim, all over the place. You know, it's just, this is the Beis HaKvaris, and these are Matzevas. Where do these Matzevas come from? The Nazis, Yimach Shemam, they needed to make there's a hill on the other side of the road. They needed to make a path up to the hill. So they took Matzevas and they made it into a road. And that was the road. And then after the war, when, you know, they came back in and they took out the road, which was Matzevas, they just brought them back here and they left them here in the Beis HaKvaris. As you see throughout Europe, all of these broken Matzevas. Here's a mass grave, or a memorial to a mass grave of Yidden that were killed in Ger. Now this is a very interesting thing. There's a, I don't know if I have another picture of it. Let me see. No, we don't have another picture of it. But this was a gate that was like an inner gate they had set up here in the Beis HaKvaris. This was originally, I don't remember the whole story, maybe someone remembers. There was a whole story about Yidden who didn't want to give up somebody, and what the Nazis, like 100 and some Yidden, and the Nazis basically just shot them at this gate. And again, you see the bullet holes here are still here from where the Nazis shot these Yidden in front of this gate. I don't think this was the original place of it. I think afterwards they brought it here and they put it into the Beis HaKvaris. So that was the Beis HaKvaris in Ger. It was really, you know, when you saw the Beis HaKvaris in Warsaw, at least there were Matzevas. Over here you mamish saw Churban, mamish saw Churban, and that was that. From there we went to the Beis Medrash in Ger. This was the original Beis Medrash in Ger. This is, it's being reconstructed, it seems. You can't get in. This courtyard is an interesting thing. One of the people with us, Rabbi Yamin, his grandfather remembers from Ger that during Yom Noiraim there would be 10,000 people on Yom Noiraim, and they would stand here in the courtyard in Davin. There was not enough room in the Beis Medrash, and somehow they were able to hear in the courtyard. So this is where they stood. Well, this is... Now, I don't think I have a picture here. Somewhere in this neighborhood, we weren't 100% sure if it's adjacent to this building or it's across, is the house of the Ger Rebbe's. The thing is that it's well known. I looked around and people have gone there from any money in the world. The Goyim don't let anybody in. They're not interested. Which is an interesting thing because usually in Europe they're very happy for prices to let people tour. But they don't let anyone in. So there's no real... We weren't really sure if it's which house it was. We went around to the other side. All the houses looked the same, and we had pictures of it. But even with the pictures, the houses looked the same. So we're not really sure which one it was. But this is for sure the Beis Medrash. And this is just a picture of the you know, the street, the town name as you enter the town. Gora Kalria, however you pronounce that. I didn't learn Polish very well while I was there. Actually, the way I kept the driver up most of the time was mispronouncing the name so that he could correct me. And it actually worked. You go through so many shtetlach, it worked. Okay, from there we left Ger. Here we're leaving Ger and we're going to Lublin. It's about a 2-hour drive to Lublin. The problem was you had to get onto a highway. The problem was it was rush hour. Rush hour, Ger rush hour is leaving Warsaw, going to Warsaw. It's all related to each other. So every entrance to the highway, wherever we went, was totally blocked. So I turned on Waze, and instead of the driver's GPS, and Waze took us all the way, the back roads in Baruch Hashem. In less than 2 hours, we made it here down to Lublin. We came to Lublin. It was still before Shkia, and this is the building of Yeshivas Chachme Lublin. It's a beautiful building. Yeshivas Chachme Lublin. Now we'll see here, this is a little bit closer. He says, Yeshivas Chachme Lublin, the Marem Shapiro, the Chuvanim Shima Liyas Hashem Lamedchem. Now if you look over here, this is a picture, an original picture that they have inside of how the building looked when it was inaugurated. So when you look at it like this, you see Yeshivas Chachme Lublin, and you know, you look back at the other picture, it's pretty much restored beautifully. Now, what it is now is a hotel. It had been a nursing home for years, then it was desolate, then it was just empty for a while, and now it's called Hotel Ilan. They renovated it, and it's a hotel, and we stayed in this hotel. There's a kosher restaurant there, there's a mikveh there, the actual Beis Medrash, I'm not sure, I thought I had pictures, I'm sorry. I thought I had a picture of the inside of the Beis Medrash as well, forgot to put them in. Which is just redone the original Beis Medrash of Chachme Lublin. And we made a siyum, and that day was the siyum on Masechta Bava Basra, Daf HaYomi, was punked, happened to be that Monday, and we were there for Mincha Ma'ariv. Someone else made a siyum, and then we made a siyum later at night, and it was a very emotional matzav over there to be in Yeshivas Chachme Lublin. The next morning we had Vasikin Minyan with the Svardim. There was a big, about 40 Svardim there, and we had Duchening, and afterwards we also learned Daf Yaimi over there, Sanhedrin, Beis Amar Aleph, and that was Yeshivas Chachme Lublin. Okay, from there, this is, so we're holding now Tuesday morning. Tuesday morning, we first started off in the morning to the old Beis Akvaris in Lublin. The old Beis Akvaris in Lublin, this is the wall, Beis Akvaris in Lublin. Now, and this is the oldest matseva. Also, as we'll see, the Beis HaKvaris in Lublin is also totally, very much destroyed. There's a lot of kvarim there that just, you're walking over everything. But this is the oldest matseva. It's about 500 years old. It's a yid named Rabbi Yaakov Kuppelman. Now, there's a whole story behind this that I discovered. There's a very famous yid in Prague. He's brought down, the Rama quotes him, the Marshal quotes him. His name was Rabbi Yaakov Falk, however you want to pronounce his name. He was a Goyin Adir, and he had a lot of psakim. There was a famous story with his sister-in-law that she was married off as a katana, and he allowed her to be mema'in. A whole ganza maisa that he fought against all the Rabbani Prague, and they ended up, the Rama was maskim to him, the Marshal was maskim to him. But a whole maisa was that he once came out against the king of Czechoslovakia or whatever, Austria, Hungary, Empire, whoever was in those days, had a doctor, a Jewish doctor, who ended up being mezana with an Ashes Ish. And this Rabbi Yaakov Palak asked her to her husband, obviously. And the king was furious about it because his doctor was upset about it. And he told him if he doesn't retract from the psak, he's going to kill him. And he refused to retract and he had to escape. And he ran away. And years later, someone showed up in Lublin and he called himself Rabbi Yaakov Kuppelman. And he sat and he learned, and he was nifta there. And the rumor, or the legend, so to speak, is that this Rabbi Yaakov Kopelman is really that Rabbi Yaakov Pollack. He was afraid anyone should know who he was, and that's his kever over here, and it's the oldest kever over there in that Beis HaKvaris. This is the kever of the Chayzim Elublin. The Chayzim's kever, it's very hard to see inside because it has all this mesh. The Chayzim, as we know, was from the Ge'ayne Chasidus, Balei Maifis. Needs no introduction, the Chayzim Elublin. Here's the Marshal from our Gemaras, from Yam Shel Shleimai. The Marshal's kever is over here as well. This is the original one over here, and this is the rebuilt kever of the Marshal. At every place, we said Tehillim, and we said over who each person was. This is Reb Shalom Shachner. Reb Shalom Shachner was the Ramah's father-in-law. Reb Shalom Shachner was the Ramah's father-in-law. He was a Rav in Lublin, and he was also from the Gedolei Poland. So again, you're also talking about 500 years ago. The Ramah is also almost 500 years ago. So that's Reb Shalom Shachner. In front of Reb Shalom Shachner, it's hard to see, but there was a kever of someone named Reb Ezra Barzel. Reb Ezra Barzel was the Reb Ezra Barzel was the Chayzes Bar Plukta in Lublin, meaning he was the Misnagid and the Chayzeh was the Chassid, and they were both Gedolei Olam. And in those days, you have to put into perspective, especially in Poland, Chassidus was just making its headways in, and there was a lot of, a lot of infighting, and there was a lot of, not right word, but we're talking about Gedolei Olam, but there was a lot of strife because of it, and he was the Bar Plukta. What happened was, it's Yadua that the Chayzeh got sick, and Misnagdim, who weren't his fans, became a shtickel happy. And it was Purim time. And then the Chayzeh said, don't worry. He told his Chassidim, when I'm Nifter, no one's going to be able to even take a drink of water, because he was Nifter on Tisha B'Av. So he told him, don't worry, no one's going to be able to celebrate when I'm Nifter. When he was Taka Nifter, so the Chassidim wanted to put him into the Chalkas HaRabbanim. And the Misnagdim, the Chevra Kedisha, refused. So they went to Reb Ezra Barzel. Reb Ezra Barzel said, listen, at the end of the day, you know, there's always the higher, you have to always put into perspective, there's always the Gedolim, and then there's the people on the bottom who make lots of fights. You always have to remember that. So the Reb Ezra Barzel said, listen, you have to find him a Mokum Mechubad. And what happened was, it was late at night, and they were going, and the Rupshitzer, as we'll see him later in Lanzit, he was there, and finally he said, why do we have to look? Just let's put the Chayzer right here. And they put him down, and they buried him there. And the next morning, they realized, it's very hard to see here, but the Chayz is right in the front over there of the Beis HaKvaris, even before you get to this area, like in a real chash of a place before you get to anybody. And the Chevra Kedisha was furious that they ended up putting him in the most chash of a place. Reb Ezra Barzel said, this is the way he should be, this is the way he should stay. And Zehu, and that's how he ended up over there. I think this is the one of Reb Ezra Barzel that's broken down. So these are the... This is the old cemetery here in Lublin. Now, we knew, or I knew at least, that on my way out, I called Rav Moshe Tavyalif, one of my primary rabbeim, and he gives a shiur Reb Tzadik HaKayim in Lublin Svarim every Thursday, Friday. So he says, you're not going to Reb Tzadik? And I say, you know what? I didn't see him in any of the lists. So I started to do some research. I see, Taka, there's an aisle for Reb Tzadik in Lublin. But there's two Beis HaKvarises in Lublin. There's this one, and there's the new one. The tour guide told us, it was a Froma guy, that in the new one, there's nothing there other than the Matseva of Reb Meir Shapiro. Now, Reb Meir Shapiro is on Har HaMenuchas. They moved him. So he's not really in Lublin. So even if there's a Matseva, it doesn't really mean much. So we thought the Reb Tzadik must be here. We searched, we went through some forests, some trees, we went up and down. Lamaisa, we couldn't find it, okay? We felt bad, but that's the way it had to be. We'll hear the end of the story in a moment. From there, this is about 10:30 in the morning. From here, we went to the concentration camp called Majanik. Majanik is about a mile outside of Lublin. Mamish, it's right on the outskirts. Right now, it's not even outskirts, but in those days, it was mamish on the outskirts. And that was one of the things about Lublin. The concentration camp was right over here. You see the watchtowers, you see the barbed wire. We'll see just a run through some of the pictures. It was this was like our Bruchim Abayim, so to speak, over here to the concentration camps. And it was a very, very, to say the least, tough morning for all of us. Here you see the baths and the gas chambers. Here's baths, and here's like shower things. These are the rollers that the Yid and Nebuch to roll out. It says they were pulled by prisoners to level roads. It was one of the most exhausting kinds of work done here in Majanik. Here you see them on the side. They had to schlep these gigantic things to do it. You see just in the background, you can see how big the place is. Just to look down the road, the different barracks, all the different barracks here. And they had, it's a museum. You go in and out of barracks and they have all different pictures and different things to look at. There's only so much that one could really handle at a time. It's paladic to see. You see people, the publishers are coming there with their kids in strollers, like they're going to Memphis Kitty Park for the day. You know, they're coming it's nauseating. But you know, that's just what it is. To them, it's just a piece of history, I guess. Here you have some of the bunk beds rebuilt here in the barracks. Now this is an interesting thing. You'll see, one second, let me just show you the picture first. This is called the Column of the Eagles. Now you know the eagle was the Nazi symbol. So what's it doing here? So if you look over here, it says like this. It says, this was designed by whomever. It was erected by Polish political prisoners on the camp authorities' order in the spring of 1943. Germans conceived it as a decoration of Field 3. That was the area that it's in. It was the first monument to the victims of Majanik, as some ashes from the camp crematorium were secretly placed inside the base. So the prisoners put them there, like they, you know, the Nazis were having, this was their like spitz of their victory, and they put a memorial. Now you have to remember also, there were not a lot of Yidden in Majanik. Majanik was, towards the end there were, but the beginning was really for political prisoners. Now I'm not here to be melamed zchus on the publishers or whatever it is, but there were people in Lublin who made a little bit of a shtink about this, and they ended up in Majanik themselves. So it was probably easier for the locals to just keep themselves like machnish wissendik to anything that's going on, because they would end up there as well. So that's this thing over here. You know, you think why they keep this Nazi thing sitting over here, but on one hand it has ashes from the crematorium in there as well. This is a monument there, a gigantic monument. When you go up these stairs, and basically there's a pit here, and you look into it, it's full of ashes and dirt. I didn't want to show a picture of it, but you could still see bone fragments there. It's the ashes from the crematorium. The Nazis used a lot of the ashes, and they mixed it with dirt to use as fertilizer throughout Lublin. But here they made with this monument, they took all the ashes there, they put them in there, and it's just a monument to the, you know, to those who were killed there. And there were Yidden killed there as well. There were Kedoshim there as well. Here you see the crematorium. You'll see inside, this is the crematorium. Over here also, there's a monument. On November 1943, 18,000 Jews, prisoners of Majanik, and labor camps in Lublin were executed at this site. I think it says approximately 42,000 Jews were murdered between on November whatever 3rd and 4th, in those 2 days. So over here in the back is where they were killed. You can even see still the mounds. It's still like, you know, hills of where the bodies are of the Kedoshim over there at this place. Okay, so this was Majanik. We were there for a couple of hours, 12:30, 1 o'clock. From there. Now what happened was, on the way to Majanik, this Reb Tzadik was bothering me very much. So on the way to Majanik, I was on my phone trying to find anywhere to tell me where Reb Tzadik was buried. So then I found a list that said Beis HaKvaris 1, all the lists that we saw. Beis HaKvaris 2 was Reb Tzadik HaKayin. So I asked the guy, who's Beis HaKvaris 2? He says, it must be the new Beis HaKvaris. I said, you don't know Reb Tzadik's there? He says, I have no clue. So I said, we got to go back. So he says, we'll go back on the way back from Majanik. So we went to the hotel where the key is kept. Every Beis HaKvaris has a key. In the morning, we had taken the key from the old Beis HaKvaris, but we didn't take the key from the new Beis HaKvaris because we didn't think we were going there. We went back there. They told us the key is gone. Someone took it. They don't know who. They don't know when he's coming back. So we took our chances and we went here to the new Beis HaKvaris. It was locked and there was nobody there. We couldn't get in. Now, if you'll notice closely over here, you'll see there's a wall, and in between, see the stone, and in between are like metal menorahs over here. So we decided that, what's the big deal? We'll just climb over. It's not such a big deal. So we got our foothold in there, and each one of us, and there's videos for private showing of each of us going over. That's not for public showing. So we all jumped over. Where are we going to find Reb Tzadik? So we go in there, and we go and we follow to the Beis HaKvaros. We see in the distance the main gate is open. We're looking. I didn't show pictures of it. There's different mass graves there. I don't think I had any pictures of it. No. There's mass graves there. There's different things there. We didn't see any Reb Meir Shapiro, and we didn't see any Reb Tzadik. We were about to give up and say Farfalin, and on our way out, I'm just skipping ahead a second, on our way out, all of a sudden we noticed this small thing here. And this small sign said, this is the main entrance, and we were over here in the Beis HaKvaros part of it, and all of a sudden we realized you got to walk all the way around. It's a gigantic place, and also, it's a gigantic Beis HaKvaros that's just also all overgrown because there's no matzevas and nothing, very few. We realized where it is, so once we did that, Baruch Hashem, we found Reb Tzadik HaKayin Milublin's oil. This Reb Tzadik HaKayin inside is also Reb Leibla Eger. Reb Leibla Eger was Reb Akiva Eger's grandson, Reb Shlaim Eger's son, is well known. He became a chassid. Reb Shlaim Eger sat shiva on him when he became a chassid. Reb Akiva Eger came to visit him once in Lublin. And while we were there, it worked out basheret because we called Reb Moshe Tov Yalif. It was 6:20 a.m. in New York. And he told us over here, we're all around the phone, he told us a shtickle tayr from Reb Tzadik. While we were there, we listened. If we had gone in the morning, like we thought, it would have been the middle of the night. I wouldn't have called him. But as I sent him a text, are you up? He says, I'm up now. So he said for about 15 minutes, he said it's a shtickel from Reb Tzadik. And next week's Reb Tzadik, HaKayin Shir in New York, we got a whole Mishaberach. He told the whole story, how we had to jump the fence and the whole thing. So it was all on there. You could listen on there. So that was Reb Tzadik HaKayin in Lublin. We dove in there, and we actually met another family coming in afterwards. They said, do you have the key? They said, no, we also jumped the fence. Him, there was a wife and kids, they all jumped the fence. But again, you see, this is all Beis HaKvaros over here. This is all Beis HaKvaros, gigantic place. Okay, that was Lublin. From Lublin, it's about 1 o'clock in the afternoon now on Tuesday, and we started our way towards Lizhensk, but on the way we traveled to a place called Sherbishin. Sherbishin, my shver asked me specifically to go to this place, and you'll see why, and you'll hear why in a moment. We come to Sherbishin, Baruch Hashem, we found it, and this is right in the front here is a gate around a couple of matzevas in Sherbishin. And the story is as follows. It says over here, near here is the matzevas of these people, and next to it, nearby, samach le'ilon, near the tree, al pi ha-mesayra, is the matzeva of Reb Simcha Akayin Rappaport. They used to call him the Rebbe Reb Simcha. He was the father of Rabbeinu Chaim Akayin mi Rappaport. Tshuvas Rabbeinu Chaim Akayin. It's a famous tshuva sefer. Now, just to take a moment, it's kedai to hear this story because this was one of the highlights of the trip. In the days of the Maram Lublin, which is about 90, 100 years before Reb Simcha was born. Now, Reb Simcha is 300 years ago. We're talking about close to 400 years ago. In the days of the Maram Lublin, there was a rule in all of Poland that if you wanted to become a Rav in any city, you had to go to the Lublin, to the Maram and others, the Vad Arba Aratzis, and take a Bechina that you're roy to be a Rav. So there was a Rav in a certain city who became a Rav, and he didn't take the Bechina. So they called him to Lublin. So he came to Lublin for Shabbos. No one knew who he was. And on Shabbos, the Maram of Lublin was darshening in Shul. And this Rav kept on hacking around in the middle. And Matzah Shabbos, he came to the Maram. And the Maram tells him, who are you? Why are you here? So he says, what do you mean? You called me to come here. So he says, oh, you're that Rav? So the Maram told him, I see you're roy to be a Rav. However, I had a hakpada on you a whole Shabbos because you were hacking around in my drasha, and I'm not sure you're going to make it home. So what happened was, on the way in Sherbishin, on the way down to his place in Sherbishin, he got sick. Very sick, deathly ill. And he realized that it was the hakpada of the Maram Lublin. So he called the Chevra Kaddish, and he told them, write everything down in the ledgers of the Chevra Kaddish and the Pinkus, that he's mekabel on himself the din of the Maram Lublin. However, yesh din v'cheshbin. It doesn't go on its own, and the Maram Lublin is going to have an einikel one day that's going to pass through Sherbishin, and he's going to die here as well, and he should be buried next to me. That's what he said. And he was Nifter. 90 years later, Reb Simcha Kohen Merappaport was the Abbezin in Lublin, was on his way down to the south of Poland to Lvov, to Lemberg. Lemberg was the Ir Ve'en B'Yisrael. He was going there to become the Rav in Lemberg. And on the way in Sharbishin, Mitamol, he became very sick. And no one knew what to do. And the Chevra Kedisha opened the ledgers to see some types of skulas, and they found this story. So they brought it and they showed it to him. And he says he's Mekabel, that he should be the one to pay up the chayv of the Zayda, the Meram in Lublin. And Itaka wants to be buried next to the original Rav who was there. So the problem was, when he was Taka Nifter there, and his son, Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen, became the Rav after him. And in Lemberg, they Taka call him the Lemberger Rav, Rav Simcha HaKohen, even though he never made it there. But it was such a chashivas for them that he became their Rav. They called him their Rav. He's considered one of their Rabbanim. But the story is that, right, this is Rav Bick, Zichrono Livracha, Rav Moshe Bick, who was also an Einikol, used to say that the story was that when they came to bury him next to that Rav, there was a big tree that wasn't there. There was no room. And Alpi, some type of Pella, the tree moved itself over and made room for him to be buried. That's why the tree is such a big thing here, over here. So this is, in this gated area, Einikloch rebuilt it. Now here's the tree. This is the tree, and as we'll see in a moment, inside people put the candles and kvitlach in there, all different types of things over there. Now he said, I don't know if I have another picture over here, it's hard to see over here. He said, Rav Simcha HaKohen said on his matseva that any of his yoytze chalotzov, any of his einikloch that come to his kever, until 10 generations, he'll be a melitz for them. So my shver is the 10th generation in his. There's a lot of Einikloch. All the Rappaports are Einikloch from them. But is the 10th generation from his sniff. So he asked me, he's not able to go himself, but he asked me if we're anywhere in the neighborhood, if I could stop by and say Tehillim over there. So we did. We said Tehillim. We met him in Shabbarach. It was also a very, very emotional matzav over there in Sharbishin. And this is this tree that Rabbik said, the tree is still there. You can still see it. This tree that moved itself over for his kever. So that's Sharbishin. We saw a lot of, this is the real Hicks of Poland. But Baruch Hashem, there were two kids there playing, no shirts, no socks, but they had fidget spinners. So they're not so far out. Okay. We have a picture of that somewhere else also. That's in general pictures. Now, okay, from Sharbishin, this is about 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we now went down to Lezhensk. 1 hour and 20 minutes. And if you remember from last year, where there's a lot more traveling, over here, everything is really close. So we were able to really keep things moving. And because we only took a minivan, this was our lechatchila, we kept the group small, we didn't need a bus, we were able to move and keep things going. So Sharbishin, we went down to Lezhensk. Okay, this is the oil of the Noam Elimelech in Lezhensk. Next to it over here are some kvarim of different relatives and different people over here in Lezhensk. Here is the kever of the Noam Elimelech. We'll see a better picture as well. Here we have a picture, there's like a gate around it. Up here is this gigantic, it's hard to see, but it's a gigantic oil candle. We watched them, we have a video somewhere of the guys climbing up there to put it in there and light it. Over here also, you could see, they open up the gate over here. If a person wants to be, when it says in Rashi that Kaliv went lishtateach al kibrei avos, to prostrate himself on the kever of avos, so people over here actually, just lie down on the kever. That's what they do here. I didn't chap what was going on until the guy who has the key asked me if I wanted to do it. Then I realized what was happening. So you actually see, you could see in the original picture over here, actually people go in here and basically lie down on the kever. On the side is Ezes Nashim, there's different rooms. So we daven there. We were there for a while. We were here in Lezhensk for a long time, I think Yitzi Zeinikov, the Naim Elimelech, and we had someone from Montreal told us a shtickle on the phone from Naim Elimelech. Menachem Lubling's father said a shtickle over from the Naim Elimelech. We followed it inside the Sefer as well. He spoke to us. So, you know, we spent a lot of time over here, and we actually ate supper over here in the Achnasas Archim. We had made reservations. A very geshmaka couple runs the Achnasas Archim, so we had supper in their house. And that was Lezhensk. So it was Lezhensk. It's about 7 o'clock at night now. We're supposed to make it to Lancet for the nightfall, and we wanted to make it there before nightfall so we could get in some kfarim there, again, just to keep things moving the next day. On the way, or as we're leaving, someone says, why don't we stop in Shinov on the way? So we said, well, so the driver told us, if you want to stop in Shinov, you're not going to make it to Lancet before nightfall, and we'll have to do it in the morning. So we said, it's okay, it's kedai. So, because it's a little bit out of the way, Lancet is in this direction, and here is Shinov. So we decided to go to Shinov. We went to Shinov. It took us maybe 20, 25 minutes. The guy really put the pedal to the metal. We made it there. We don't have a great picture of it, but basically the Beis HaKvaros is in some old Polish guy's backyard. You got to get him to open the gate to his front yard. You drive through past his house on the side. You can't get out. Past his house is a bathtub on one side and his house on the other. And you go through, and then in the backyard is this aisle of the Shinover, and there's Kvarim here in the back as well, so the whole Beis HaKvaros is behind here. He has the key to it. So this is the aisle of the Shinover, this is the Shinover, Rebbe Cheskel Shraga, that's a good, you know, he was the son of the Divrei Chaim, as we'll get to him as well, and this is the Shinover, the Heilige Shinover. So we went to him, we were there for a few minutes, and when, from there, Shinov, we went to Lancet, over here. Lamaisa, Baruch Hashem, again, we put the pedal to the metal, and we are able to get there as it came Shkia time. So we're able to daven mincha as we waited for the key to the Lancet Beis HaKvaros. We felt, you know, it was with all the rebbes and everything, we'd have to be so makbid on Shkia. It wasn't like in Litta. So, you know, it was okay if we missed it a little bit. So we daven mincha over there. And then we went into the... In Lancet is the Rupshitzer. It's a little hard to see here. The Rupshitzer of Naftali Rupshitz. We spoke about him in by the Chayza. Here's the other side of his matseva. This is heavy, all the kvitlach over here on the inside. And there's another, there's two aisles in the same place. This is a son of the Bnei Yisachar. We'll see the Bnei Yisachar later. A son of the Bnei Yisachar also here in Lancet. He has his own aisle as well. So we davened by these two, what's it called? Now Lancet also, gigantic Beis HaKvaros. It was very hard to see. Every once in a while you trip over a matseva. Basically, it's just plain grass. Gigantic Beis HaKvaros, plain grass. It was pitch black. You really couldn't see or do anything. But this is what we did. So then we went to our hotel in Lancet, and we stayed over the night in Lancet. The next morning in Lancet, we had a dead battery on our car, which was okay. We changed the schedule that morning. And basically, we decided to add in Dinov to the Bnei Yisachar into the schedule. So first we went, while we were waiting for the battery to be taken care of, we went to Potocki's palace. We've spoken about Potocki. Potocki was Rav Ram ben Avram's father, the Ger Tzedek from Vilna's father. His name was Potocki. Potocki was the biggest landowner in Poland. He owned 999,999 pieces of land, and he refused to buy an extra piece to make it a million, because then you wouldn't have to talk, when you talked about him, you would just say a million. Here you have to say 900,999,999. He wants you to talk. So he's a big bald guy, but that's what he wanted. So the palace is still there. I don't remember if I have a picture of it or not. Maybe, I think I do, but it's a museum now. We didn't go into the museum, but what I wanted to see, let me see what's the next picture over here, is this. This is the coat of arms of the Potocki family. Mesaira is, if you see, it's not symmetrical here. It should be a piece over here as well. This was the piece of Avram and Avram that they took off when he became a ger. They disowned him. So that's the only reason I wanted to see it. The Eilam wanted to know why I was so interested in the Tzalem here. But it wasn't to do... This is it. This is the Mesaira here. Here's the palace. Gigantic palace. There was a moat. We went into the moat and all different types of things there as well as we waited for the battery to be recharged. And from there, here we're in Lancet, we then drove down to Dinov. We drove down to Dinov, as you see, about a 40-minute drive. In Dinov, there's two aisles there. One of them is this Rabbi Yeshua Dinover. No one apparently knew exactly who he was, but he was obviously a Rav in Dinov. And then the other oil is the oil of the Bnei Yisachar. This is the Bnei Yisachar, Reb Tzvi Elimelech. Here's his Rebbetzin. Here is his son. If you notice, it's David with a Yud. Interesting. There's another son or Einikol over here as well. And this is the Bnei Yisachar, the Heilige Bnei Yisachar. We met a busload of Hasidim there as well. They were just leaving. And this is the Bnei Yisachar. From dinner, we decided then to go to Babov. On the way to Babov, we passed through a place called Dukla. Now, Dukla is, we had a Binyamin Eisenstark was with us. He's from Montreal, and Rav Hirschsprung was the Rav of Montreal for many years, and he was from Dukla. His Zayda was a person named Rav Shia Dukla, very famous Chashev Rav in Poland. So we passed through Dukla. He had mentioned something about Dukla, and we were on the way. All that's left in Dukla is a little sign for the synagogue, as you'll see in a moment. And this is what's left of it. It's a broken down building. I mean, it's still at least this is left. One of us jumped over the fence again to go inside and see what's there. There's not much there. If you look online, and we have some pictures as well, you could see old pictures from a few years back, a little bit more to see inside. You could see the Aron Kodesh. You could see, I didn't have any pictures, obviously, of Menorah. But this was, it seemed to have been a pretty big building here in Dukla, and this is all that's left. There's not a cemetery. There's nothing but this here. So then we stopped there for a couple minutes, and then we went from Dukla. Dukla was down here. We went to Babov. Babov. What day are we at again? We're on Wednesday. Right? Today Wednesday? Yeah, Babov. So we're in Babov here. This is the shul in Babov. This is the shul in Babov, and this is the hairdresser of the town. He has the key to the shul. You want the key, you go to the hairdresser. So he was driving us a little crazy over there. And now this is the inside of the shul. So obviously this part has been redone. There's no Sefer Torah in there. They redid, you know, repainted up the inside. But you could see, this is what's left. You could see how beautiful it was. Here's a menorah. It's really a beautiful building. It looks like Yerushalayim depicted over here. I mean, I'm assuming one day the Babovers, you know, will restore the whole place. But you could go in and every once in a while, I think they have like minyanim there, you know, when some Babovers come or something like that. From there, we went to the Beis HaKvaris. The Beis HaKvaris in Babov is way, way up on a hill. You got to, I don't even know if buses could ever make it up there. I mean, like a single road up a hill. More than a hill, it was like a mountain to get up there. And we had to get the key. The key was, the hairdresser doesn't have the key anymore. You got to get it from the municipality. So we went up there, and there's the oil of the Babovers. Now this is Reb Chaim Yaakov, who was a Rav in Babov. I'm not sure if he was part of the I'm sorry. He's an Edom of Reb Shlaiman Mibabover. It says here, he's the Neched of the Baal Yismach Moshe, and he's the son-in-law of the Reb Shlaiman Mibabover, and he's also an Einikol of the Divrei Chaim. And here is Reb Shlaiman Mibabover, the original Reb Shlaiman. The original Reb Shlaiman Mibabover, who was an Einikol also of the Divrei Chaim, and he's the only one really here, because as you'll see, this is Reb Ben-Zion. His son was killed in the war. And Reb Ben-Zion's son, Reb Shlaima, has already made it to America. So in the whole Babover dynasty is not a very long dynasty. And, you know, now we're down then as Rav Tolchik, and now you're down to the two Babover Rebbes at the moment. So the only ones really here in Babov is the original Reb Shlaima, who started the Babover Chassidus. Here's a picture of from the Beis HaKvaros overlooking, this is how, on the mountain that we're on, overlooking the next valley, and there's matzevas all over here, and there are some matzevas that people have found, their relatives, you can see they've been redone a little bit, people of Babovers who have gone back and seen and redone some of them, but and it wasn't totally destroyed here as well. Okay, from Babov, we went now to Sanz. Now we saw the Sanz, it's again about 45 minutes, and from Sanz, as you see, we're moving through this day over here. We're in Dinov, and then Dukla, and Babov, and Sanz. And in Sanz, we went to the Beis HaKvaris over here. And this is what I told you last time about where Beis HaKvaris starts. You see over here, there's a picture at the entrance of Beis HaKvaris that says that really, from the gate of the Beis HaKvaris into the street, 10.6 feet is still Beis HaKvaris. Meaning the street was built over Beis HaKvaris. So Kehanim have to make sure that they don't get within 10.6 feet of the gate. Further down the gate, it's even further into the street. So when they redid it after the war, you know, I guess the road was there. However they did it, they had to put it up over here. So, but really, where you're driving and standing, you really push it on top of Kvarim. This is the Isle of the Sands, the Divrei Chaim. And this was a place, you have to know, the Sands was always, Mashver told me that even before the war, from Antwerp, people would travel hours and hours to come to Divrei Chaim's kever. Divrei Chaim was well known to go as a place of tefillah and the makam of Maifsim and things like that. It's also a very, very big Beis HaKvaris. So this is the Ayel. You see just a picture. That building I just showed you is over here in the back. This is just all these are Kfarim over here. All these are Kfarim. A gigantic, gigantic place, also a lot destroyed. This is the inside. Inside you have over here, this is Reb Moshe, who's the son of the Shinever. We saw the Shinever. So he's an Einikol of the Divrei Chaim. And here's the son of the, another Einikol, and here's another son, a lot of the family. And here you have, this is the Divrei Chaim, and here I'll see a closer picture in a minute, and this is Divrei Chaim's son on the side. Here's the Divrei Chaim, you see Mamash full of kvitloch and things like that. Marna Divrei Chaim. I don't have pictures that I don't think I put pictures here, no. On these pictures, it's a very big oil, and behind, like here you're facing, these are like 3, 4, 5 kvarim in a row, and you see over here, they don't want you too close, you light candles, full of kvitloch. But even behind, so to speak, where we're standing, there were other matzevas as well. Some had names on them. Some were einikloch, some were nephews. There were some women. There were women outside. There's a lot going on over here in Sanz. And that busload of chassidim that we met in Dinov, they came right after we finished in Sanz over here. So we basically missed them in both places. We had Dinov to ourselves, and we had Sanz to ourselves till they came. Now in Sanz, this is about 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon. We're now starving, and Baruch Hashem, you know, like any, the difference between Litta and Poland is when you get to the Chassidish places, there's always food. The Achnasas Archim over there is a massive Achnasas Archim with tradition soups and hot meals you could heat up in the microwave, and you know, all different Heimish stuff over there. And there was the Polish lady who has the key here to this Beis HaKvaris. She rides her bike from the entrance to the aisle to get there and opens it up. So she runs this Hachnasas Archim over there. And we loaded up on food. It was the first time I think I had to shtup everyone to hurry up. And I felt bad about it, even though we're all starving. But we needed to get to Auschwitz. And it was at least a 3-hour drive to Auschwitz. Again, we tried to pack in this day. This day was really packed in. And we got our food there, and as we're leaving, so we put money in the pushka, in the Achnasas Archim. This Polish lady is sitting outside the entrance. Every person walks out, she goes, Batsulin, Batsulin, gotta pay, gotta pay. So, those are her Yiddish word that she knew. So so we told her we paid already inside. She goes, no, that's for the rabbi, this is for me. I bought the water. She tells everything that she has to buy. Fine, you gave her a couple of zlote. She was happy, but... anyway, so that was Divrei Chaim in Sanz. Okay, from there we drove from here, from Sanz, all the way to Auschwitz. Again, we used Waze to get us the quickest way there because it shaved a half hour off of the GPS. And you have to realize, in Poland, as big as the country is, there's only 2 normal highways in the whole country. So we're really going a lot of back roads here, a lot of curves, it was only so fast you could go. It was really like going through, country roads over here to get all the way past Krakow and getting to Auschwitz. We got to Auschwitz about 5-6 o'clock in the evening, here's Auschwitz. This is the famous picture of the entrance of where the trains come into Auschwitz. I'm not going to go through the whole Arichas now, but there's Auschwitz and there's Birkenau. People, they're really two sections of the same camp, but the most... Birkenau, right? Am I right?
This one was Birkenau.
Birkenau, yeah. So, yeah, right, Birkenau. So most of the Yidden were in Birkenau. Auschwitz, which is called Auschwitz I, was really mostly political prisoners, and they didn't even have a crematorium in there until much later during the war. Birkenau was the place where all the Yidden were brought, and where the crematoriums were. And most Yidden who have family who either perished there or were in the camps, they were over here in Birkenau. The famous Auschwitz Museum is in Auschwitz I. For that, you need to have tickets months in advance. You have to go, you can't do your own tour. You have to take their tour for 3-4 hours. And the advisement of our tour guide, who's done this many times, we did Birkenau, which was enough for us as well. So here's the train coming, you know, where the trains came in. Here you have, now what the Nazis did, they blew up the crematorium, so there's really nothing left. These are the blown up crematoriums over here. And they have diagrams where they show you exactly where the gas chambers were and where all things were over here. The Nazis themselves blew it up to destroy the evidence. You see, you know, they destroyed it. In Auschwitz I, in the museum, they recreated some of the gas chambers and the crematoriums. But these are the original ones that the Nazis themselves destroyed. You see over here, they themselves blew it up. Over here, you'll see there's 4 matzevas. There's a close-up over here. It says, "P'makim ze pizer afram shel nashim gvarim yeladim shenitvichu bidei haroitzchem anatzim yizichem baruch." Over there in this place, behind here, and there's one in each language, different languages, is where there's ashes from the crematorium that were buried over here, and they put up matzevas over here as well. You see it in Yiddish as well, the same thing. Again, this was, we had Einiklach of people who had grandparents here in Auschwitz. This was a... It was a very, very... It's hard to explain why, you know, I mean, you could understand why, but it's just hard to explain. You're not really seeing much. In Majanik, you saw a lot more. There was a lot more to see. But over here, it was just, you know, it was really, really just an emotional place. You probably felt the Kedusha. That's the only thing I can say. Your mamash felt the Kedusha of the Kedushim here. Here you see a picture. This is the gate. Auschwitz was... The Nazis were so methodical, and there were so many different sections and gates into them, and that's why no one knew what was going on one place and the next. We mentioned this on Tisha B'Av as well. You had Rav Aronson was in one place doing things. You had the Weitzner Rebbe in one place doing something. They didn't even know. They didn't know, you know, what was going on. Everything was contained. And here was in each section you walk through and you see. Here's again. This is rebuilt bunks. It says replicas of bunks. Here's pictures, original pictures of the bunks. Now here is just, we'll give a special mention to Menachem here, because Menachem decided that he's going to try to run the distance of how long it is, just to get an idea of how big the place is, because the one thing that you're blown away by, and the tour guide said this as well, that he's been studying Auschwitz and the war since he's 7 years old, but till you see it, you don't understand how massive this place really was. And Menachem said, for him to get a good feel it, he's got to jog it, or he sprinted for that matter. Now, Menachem's in very good shape, and he runs a long way, but he ran, and he ran, and he ran, and he ran. And when he came back, he was pretty exhausted. And it was really, really, it's a massive, massive place, and the enormity of how many people were there, like sardines, and what went on, is really just overwhelming. Again, here's a picture looking from the other direction of the tracks. This area, pretty much, it's hard to see, but when the trains came in, they would come to a platform here. Mengele, Yimach Shemai, would stand over there and go to the right or the left or whichever ways they were sent to Yidden. It was coming towards the end of the day, and we daven mincha here. We had to daven. We daven mincha by the entrance of Auschwitz. As I said on Tisha B'Av, it was like from the most emotional minchas ever. It was really the end of an emotional thing. We had already made a kelmale on the tracks. We had made a kelmale for the kedushim. We had sung an imamin. It was really something else. So this was Auschwitz over here. So this is about, it was about 8 o'clock, 8:30 at night by the time we finished up over here in Auschwitz. We were there for a couple of hours, and from there, we had to go back to Krakow. So here we're going from Auschwitz back to Krakow. It's about an hour and change. I don't think it took an hour and a half, a little bit less. And we had to get back there for supper. And supper we ate over there in Krakow. And then we went to the hotel in Krakow. So now this is Wednesday night. So Thursday morning, we're now in Krakow. Krakow, there's 2 Beis HaKvaris in Krakow. In the newer Beis HaKvaris, is Reb Shimon Seifer. Reb Shimon Seifer, the son of the Chassam Seifer. This is his. You can see Shimon. Shimon Seifer was a Rav from Galicia, who ended up in, I mean, from Hungary, who ended up in Krakow. And Reb Shimon Seifer, the youngest son of the Chassam Seifer, was a big Baal Maifas as well, and he's here in Krakow. Next to him is his Edim, I think. Yeah, his Edim was Reb Akiva Karnitzer, was the Edim. He was also his nephew as well. He was Reb Shimon Seifer's nephew and Edim, and he also was a Rav in Krakow as well, right next to him. Now, we found another, an Einikol, also you see the same name, right? This is the same name here. This is Akiva Karnitzer. This is a son of his, who was also a Rav in Krakow. So you're holding three Dairis already here in Krakow. And right next to him is his son, which it says a very interesting thing over here. It says, it's hard to read, but it says, 1 second. It says, Asher nerag al kiddush Hashem v'shnas tafshin be'eis shahalach b'shlichus shel something Yisrael. I thought it said a G'dayli Yisrael or something like that. He had gone in some shlichus, it says, that for Klal Yisrael, and because I can't get closer out of here, and he was killed al haderech al yidei the Germans, and he was burnt, it says, be Auschwitz, and v'huv lo'efer, and they brought his ashes here. So I don't know exactly how that worked, but somehow he was killed somewhere and burnt, and they brought his ashes here. I'd seen it was like a tiny little kever. I couldn't figure out what was going on until I read it, and I don't know the exact story behind it, and I couldn't find it, but there must be some ma'isa behind this einikol here. Now, I had known that the Ma'or V'Shemesh, the big one of the big Chassidish Rebbes, original Chassidish Rebbes, was buried here, but the tour guide didn't know anything about it. But, you know, throughout the wandering, Davi found it. And this is the Ma'or V'Shemesh here. I mean, one of the indications is when you have a box with all these candles is that it's a chash of a person. Here's the Ma'or V'Shemesh. The story goes, see, the Ma'or V'Shemesh came to Krakow also, the beginning of Chassidus, and there was a lot of issues, you know, there was a lot of resistance to him coming, and a lot of different takanas were made in Krakow against Chassidim, was because of things that he wanted to do. When he was nifter, the Chassidim wanted to put up an oil, because that's the Chassidim like to do, and it was going to make milchamas gedolos in Krakow, so they were mevater, that it shouldn't make milchamas. This is his son is next to him over here. So this is the Ma'or V'Shemesh, and this is his son. It's interesting, it doesn't say Ma'or V'Shemesh on the thing, because I think the Sefer was put out after he was nifter. So he never really wrote the Sefer Ma'or V'Shemesh. He wrote the Torah. You see, it says, Mi ben ha'admar Ma'or V'Shemesh. But on his, it doesn't say it. I don't think he himself put out the Sefer. From there, we went into the old city, to the old city of Krakow, to the Jewish quarter. And here is the Beis HaKnesses of the Ramah. The Ramah Shul, the entrance to the Ramah Shul. Here is the inside of the Ramah Shul. While I was there, I gave the history of how the Shul came about. It's not for now. But the Ramah's father built it for him. And this is a picture of the Shul. Here's the Aron Kodesh. And then right in the back of the Shul is the Beis HaKvaris. It's interesting, the Beis HaKvaris is behind the Shul. That's one of the reasons the Beis HaKvaris is still pretty much, I guess, less destroyed than other Batei Kvaris, because it was here still part of the main city. So in Shin Yad Aleph, so it's like 460 years old, this Beis HaKvaris. So here is the Matzev of the Taisis Yontif, as we've seen, the Taisis Yontif. And here's another picture of the back of the Matzev of the Taisis Yontif. And again, here's the Taisis Yontif. And here we made the Misha Berach for the not talking during davening. We made it over here. And we heard the story of the Taisis Yontif, why he's buried over here. Shlomo Karlbach coined it Yossel of the Miser. I don't know if his name is really Yossel or not, but he was buried here because of a person who didn't give tzedakah, and they found out afterwards he was giving it very secretly. They had told him in Beis Din that if he doesn't give tzedakah, they're going to bury him in the back of the Beis HaKvaris, or by the gate, as a shayla in the girsas of the story. but in not a mechubadik place, and they taka buried him there. And then when they found out that he was taka one of the biggest balit staka bitzina, the Taisis Yantiv says, my only tikkun is I should be buried next to him. So that's why he's buried here all the way in the far corner. Now, is this Yasala the Miser? I don't know. There's a lot of stones here. As you see, the matzevas were broken, a lot of them, and someone restored them by just throughout the whole Beis HaKvaris, these little metal plates on top of them. So obviously this must have been somebody, or there's some Messiah, this is someone Chashev, or people assume this is that you know, Tzadik Nistar. So whether his name was Yasala or someone else, I don't know. But there were stones over there right next to the Kever, the Taisis Yantif. From there you move on to the Rebbe, Reb Heschel, the Chanukas HaTaira, Sefer Chanukas HaTaira, the Rebbe Reb Heschel, who was the Rebbe of the Shach, and so he's over here as well. Right next, here you see the Rebbe Reb Heschel. And here we have the Magine Shleima. The Magine Shleima, the Sefer Magine Shleima, is a Zayda of the Pnei Yeshua. And in his Sefer, it's called Magine Shleima, for those who know, because he tries to answer all the kashas Taisus has on Rashi. That's why he's the Magen of Shleima. Supposedly Rashi came out to greet him when he was Nifter. So his kever is right here next to the Rebbe of Heschel. And then you have the Bach. The Bach's kever is down the line here, just a close picture. You see, they're all in fences, so it's hard to get good pictures over here of this is the kever of the Bach. And here's the kever of the Megala Amukas. The Megala Amukas, he says, Hu sha'aymrim alav sha'dibur ita eliyo panim al panim. It's pretty chashev, they write it as matzeva, that Eliyo Hanavi used to speak to him. So this is the Megala Amukas. Next to the Megala Amukas, his wife and his son. There's a famous story in the front of the Megala Amukas about a fellow who came to Krakow, and he bought a kever. He wanted to buy a kever near the Megala Amukas. And he was a young guy, and he refused to say who he was. And the guy and the person running the Chevra Kadisha said, listen, you know, we don't just bury anyone near the Megala Amukas. You got to tell us who you are. So he says, no, I'll give you a lot of money. So the guy said to himself, listen, he said, this fellow wanting to buy it is a young guy. He'll be nifter in who knows how long. I'll be long gone by then. What is he going to tie me? He bought a kever next to the Megala Amukas. You know, no one will ever believe him. So I'll make some money on the side and finish. He'll get what he thinks he wants. So he sold him the kever. And to his dismay and chagrin, the guy was nifted the next day. So they buried, but he didn't tell anybody that he sold the kever next to the Megala Amukas, so that no one knew who this person was. They buried him on the far end of the Beis HaKvaris. That night, the owner of the Beis HaKvaris guy, he comes to him in a dream, and he says, we had a deal, what's going on? So he woke up, he said, nah, divrei chalomos. 2-3 days, he told him, listen, if you don't do something, the guy told him, I'm going to call you to Din Torah and Yeshiva Shalmaila. So if you want to come up, I'm going to bring you up here. So he got a little tittered at that. So he ran to the Bach. The Bach was the Rav then in Krakow. So the Bach told him, tell him Torah Lei Bashamayim. If he wants to have a Din Torah, he's got to come to my Bez Din. We'll set aside a time at this and this time. If he wants to come, he could come then. So they made a partition in the Bez Din, and all of a sudden there was like a wind came in, and he said, I'm here. So the Bach told him, what's going on? He says, I bought the kever. He says, who are you? He says, I'm not telling you. He says, the Bach said, okay, listen. He said, listen, you bought the kever, you're right. But I'll cover for the Megala Amukas. If you don't tell us who we are, who you are, we can't bury you there. So we have an Eitzah. We're going to open up the kever next to the Megala Amukas. You are on the far end of the Beis HaKvaris. If you're really chashev enough to be next to the Megala Amukas, you'll figure out a way to get into your kever. So this is what he told him. The next day, they came, and that first kever was empty, and the next one next to Megala Amukas was full and covered. They still didn't know who he was, so they wrote a little thing that said, Yagid Alav Reya, is a pasuk that says, his friend will be tell about him, meaning, we don't know who he is. It says, Zeho Isha Asher Noida Loi Shemai, we don't know his name, Yagid Alav Reya, his friend, the Megala Amukas, could testify that he's obviously someone Chashev. That was the original Matseva. In Tav Kuf Tzadi Aleph, figure out what year that was, a couple hundred years ago, they redid the Matseva on this fellow's on this fellow's kever. They added in some more words, and again, the same idea. We did not see it there. Libi Aymer Li, that matzeva was also broken down like all the other matzevas. So it's somewhere in the neighborhood, but exactly which one, we did not exactly see it. And I have never seen a modern picture of it. I've seen a picture of the old one from Tafkuf Tzadi Aleph, but we never saw it. But anyways, we said over that Maisa there. So obviously between the Megala Amukas who saw Leon Navi and this fellow who buried himself, this was a pretty chash of a Maisa as well. We had another Maisa, I'll have to say it on a Shabbos in Lublin also, about somebody who jumped out of his kever and a whole story like that also. A Maifis from the Marshal was Mechayim Esim. Okay, we'll move on. So that is that. Then you have here of Lezer Ashkenazi, the Sefer Maisa Hashem. He's also the Mechaber of the Sefer Yosef Lekach on Megillas Esther that I've spoken out numerous times. The Groz Pirish on Megillas Esther is based on the Rav Lezer Ashkenazi's Pirish. One of the charatas I have is that I didn't chap that b'shas maisa because I've learned the Yosef Lekach for years, b'Ian Rav. It's a very long Pirish. I didn't chap it b'shas maisa. It was niggling in my brain why I didn't decide to Google it at the moment. Obviously, that was the Ratzon Hashem. But he's also the Zayda of Rav Brevda. That's where Rav Brevda was very much into it. He's one of Rav Brevda's Zaydas. So that was another piece of charata that I had after I left that I didn't chap that exactly where I was. But okay, that's not here nor there. Okay, it's Rav Lezer Ashkenazi. He was a doctor, so that's why there's this serpent thing over here. What? Yeah, so Grata, if you look closely, Grata says in here, Yosef Lekach, because it says, Maisa Hashem and Yosef Lekach. When I looked closely, it was a whole pasuk, but I saw the words Maisa Hashem, Yosef Lekach wasn't clicking in my mind at that time. But okay, that's the way it goes. And then you have the Ramah. This is the kever of the Ramah. The Ramah was lifted on Lag Boimer. You see it says, B'yoyim gal l'mispar v'nei Yisrael. Lamed gimel l'mispar v'nei Yisrael. Gola kavid mi Yisrael. That's like a play on words over here. It says, M'moisha ad Moisha leikam kemoisha. From the Rambam, Moisha, until the Ramah of Moisha, leikam kemoisha. This is the Ramah's kever. And this is actually his whole family's quorum. There's his wife here, his mother here, his father here, his sister here. All different. This is him here, and all different quorum over here. This is right behind the shul. This is really like the front of the Beis HaKfaris, and you see there's candles and this over here. And this was really the last kever. We were going to go to Sarah Schneer, but this of Gedolim, of the trip, this is Thursday about noontime. The last kever of Gedolim, so to wrap it up and to sort of be ma'ached all of the tefillahs that we had davened, we said a Tehillim together over here, and we again made a Mishaberach L'chaylim over here. And we moved on. Now this interesting story. This is right outside on this exact place, right opposite the Beis HaKnesses of the Ramah. Is the following story. There was once in the days of the Ramah, they had chasanas always on Friday. There's a famous psak in Hilchas Shabbos based on a tshuvas Ramah about Amira La'akum b'makom that they couldn't get the ksuba. They couldn't make a deal on the ksuba before Shabbos, and they wanted to make the chasana after Shkia. So there was chasanas Erev Shabbos in Krakow. So there was a chasana that went and continued on to Shabbos with music and everything, and the Ramah sent out a message for them to stop. And they refused. Twice, three times, finally he told them, if you don't do it, this is going to be the end. And they didn't stop, and the whole building caved in, and they were like swallowed up by the earth. And from then on, they made a takana, no more chasanas on Erev Shabbos. And they boarded up the place, and they left it there that everyone should remember and see, Laman Yezikaran, what happened to these people who didn't listen to the Ramah or Mechal Shabbos. Rabbi Hirschfeld told me that his mother or mother-in-law, I don't remember, one of his mother or mother-in-law or grandmother, someone who was from a shtetl around Krakow as a kid, remembered still seeing it boarded up. This is a couple hundred years later, boarded up as this place, Leman, you know, Yedu. Here, I don't know, there's a little fence around this park thing. I don't know if it's the exact makam or not, but I said over that Maisa there as well. Now, from there, we went to the Sarah Schneer Beis Yaakov building. Now, I skipped really, when we ate supper the night before, we ate it in the building because there's a little caterer there now at the moment, the same caterer we had in Lublin and all the places, he's there as well. So, but it was at night, we ate in the original Beis Yaakov building, and outside, there's this plaque, building dedicated 1927, was the original Sarah Schneer building of Beis Yaakov in Krakow. Here's a picture of the building. This is the building, and we ate supper in this building the night before when we came to Krakow. From there, we passed by Schindler's factory. We didn't go in, it's a Ganze museum now, but we passed by and we were able to see Schindler's factory with all the Jews he saved over there, Oskar Schindler. This is, we passed by also like a last piece of the Krakow ghetto wall, there's a little piece remaining. And from there we went to Sarah Schneerer. Sarah Schneerer, this is her matseva here. This was actually a Nazi labor camp, and after the war, they don't know exactly, but it was in this area over here where Sarah Schneerer was. Here's the other side of the matseva. It says, HaMatseva Nereses Mishnei Sazam, Vukum Bichadesh, Tafshin Sanach Gimel. They put it back up, the matseva of Sarah Schneerer. Here's, you see how they put it back up. We said Tehillim over here, and this was really our last stop. We passed by, this whole thing was all labor camp in the back over here. We passed by the other side, it's not really there, just a monument to the labor camp. We passed it on the way to the airport, but this was really our last stop. And this was about 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock on Thursday. We had to go to Krakow to the airport to fly back. I just said B'shas Ma'isa then, it sort of wrapped it up for us because, we started off in Warsaw by the Netziv and Reb Chaim. We want to talk about the Torah of the men of Klal Yisrael in our generation. A lot of it could be this Yachis to Valozhin, for sure Valozhin, and to Netziv and Reb Chaim. And, we finished off over here by Sarah Schneerer, which is the women of Klal Yisrael. So it sort of brought it full circle over here. And that was really the end of the trip. We got on our plane in Krakow. Krakow stopped off in Warsaw, from Warsaw to Chicago, Chicago to Cleveland, each way, each time barely making the flight. So we left Krakow about 2 o'clock flight on Thursday, and we arrived, Baruch Hashem, back here in Cleveland, 12:30 a.m. that night, a mere 14, 15 hours later. And Baruch Hashem, that was our successful trip. And halavai, that the tefillah should be makabel.